my balls tightening and my cock pulsing and ropes of cum shooting across the tiles. It's the kiss that has me unraveling, barely able to stand beneath the scalding water, one hand braced against the shower wall. I don't just want part of her. I want all of her. I want to consume these boundaries between us until I finally feel whole. I press my aching forehead to the cool tile and stand in the spray until the water runs cold. It's a fitful sleep. I'm too riled up about Cranwell and excited about the trip to get any true rest. When I wake, nothing seems to happen fast enough. The plane seems to travel too slowly through the sky. The line at the rental car counter is too long. I can't navigate the city streets as deftly as I need to. I try an alternative route of back streets and alleys to avoid the traffic as I make my way to Southend, where Lachlan's apartment is, the one he's letting Rose stay in now that he's at Lark's place. I get stuck in traffic anyway, of course, because Boston rush hour is like that. I'm so worried I'm going to miss her before she heads out to work that I park 3 blocks away. I only brought a backpack, thank fuck, so I toss it over my shoulders and run the rest of the distance to Rose. By the time I reach the 5th floor, sweat mists my forehead, the wound in my brow pulsing with every beat of my heart. Rose, I say, knocking on the door. Hey, Rose!
Coming!
She chimes from the other side. I can hear the excitement in her voice, the bounce of her steps across the hardwood as she approaches. The locks shift and click in the door. And then she throws it open. Jesus fucking Christ! We both say at the same time. Her eyes are locked to my stitches and the bruise that colours my cheekbone and brow. Mine are fused to her fucking terrifying face and ridiculously hot body. The strangest contrast I've ever witnessed on a single person. She's wearing a black lace bra and matching panties, her figure a symphony of softness and strength. The lace follows the curves of her hips and the swell of her breasts, black satin straps shining with the rise and fall of her chest with every breath. There's no detail that goes unnoticed beneath my gaze. Not a single inch of fabric or skin that isn't forever seared into memory. And then I get to her face. She grins at me, showing off a set of horrifying, pointed, yellowing teeth. Too many teeth, all jammed up together. Her lips and eyes and the very tip of her nose are painted black, the rest of her face in a stark white. Two curved black lines flow halfway up her forehead to make new eyebrows, her natural ones hidden under the thick makeup. She tilts her head side to side to jostle the 3 little bells sewn to each arm of her black and white jester hat.
I'm channeling Art the Clown from Terrifier, but make it cute, with like Dracula's grill from Renfield. You like?
She says, her speech a little garbled by the fake teeth. She does a slow spin to show off the thong, the little triangle of lace contouring around the globes of her ass to disappear between the crack. My cock strains against my zipper, at least until she faces me again. I'm so conflicted. I want to fuck you so badly, but I also fear for my life. It's like wet dream nightmare fuel.
Honestly, that's the most romantic thing I've ever heard. Though I'm probably not supposed to say that. Rules and shit, right?
Right, I say, trying to contain my disappointment at how casually she just reminded me of our current situation. Rose envelops me in a brief embrace and then stands back from the door for me to pass. Rules and shit. Yeah.
Come in. Tell me all about your match and that sexy new scar. There's some rubbing alcohol and gauze pads in your guest room ensuite, by the way, in case you need to clean it up.
Fucking hell. A 1-2 punch. I feel like I'm back in the ring, and this time I'm getting pummeled by Rose instead of Nate. And honestly, I think she could take me. She's scrappy as fuck. Thanks, I say as I let the backpack slide from my shoulders. I set it down next to the couch and trail behind Rose as she heads to the kitchen, taking the teeth out as she goes. A little shard of disappointment lands in my chest when she grabs a robe lying on the back of a chair and slides it on. I appreciate it.
No worries. So, the stitches?
She asks, pulling a beer from the fridge and offering it to me. When I nod, she slides it across the island where I take a seat, then cracks open a bottle of water for herself. The stitches. Yeah, I fought Nate. Guess he got a couple of good punches in. I ended up knocking him out in the second round, though. Rose pouts, the gesture exaggerated by her stark makeup.
Poor Nate.
Nate's fine, I say, rolling my eyes. When they land on Rose, she grins as though she sees right into my jealous thoughts. I did run into Matt Cranwell, though. Even with the thick layers of makeup, I can still see the flash of fear in her face.
Cranwell? What did he want?
To be a dick, mostly. I wouldn't worry. He still got nothing to go on.
Nothing more about Eric lately?
I shake my head. It comes up in conversation here and there, usually in reference to Humboldt Lake. People still seem stuck on it. They think the search was called off too soon. Rose blows out a deep breath and nods. Her smile is weak, but it's still a relief to see it.
How about Naomi?
She's great, actually. Got herself a new boyfriend, one of the other nurses. She seems really happy. This time, Rose's smile is the real deal. She beams at me, which, even with her natural teeth, is still disturbing as fuck. I'm still not sure what to make of all this, I say as I gesture a circle toward her face.
Well, I'll give you some time to think on it. I've got to get going to the fright fair. I'm going to be late.
Rose comes around to my side of the island and slides a hand across my chest, giving me an embrace from behind. My hand circles her wrist. Her pulse drums a steady beat beneath my fingertips. I resist the urge to raise her skin to my lips, but only barely.
Thanks for fielding that asshole, Cranwell. Must be shitty having him pop up every once in a while.
The truth is, I've been thinking more and more of moving back to Boston. It wouldn't be the worst thing either to get away from Cranwell. But my interest in coming home has very little to do with him and everything to do with Rose. If she really is going to stay, it feels like the right time to consider it. If I'm being honest with myself, it's the real reason I'm here. One I'm more and more ready to tackle head on. I need to see if she might also be ready to dissolve our rules. To see what it would be like for us to make a real go of this. And being here, with her hand resting so casually on my chest like it was always meant to be there, that only makes everything clearer. It's no worries, I finally say, still relishing her gentle embrace. I can drive you there, if you want.
Nah, it's fine. You just got off the plane.
She pats me on the chest, a final stamp before she slides her hand free and starts toward the hallway that leads to the bedrooms. I wonder if she could feel the way my heart drummed against her palm. I know it's not the right time, but I'm desperate to throw my questions into the empty space where her presence just lingered. The words were right there. Ready on my tongue. Rose changes into the rest of her costume, coming out a few moments later with black and white pants and a button-up shirt, both of which seem too big for her, which only adds to her unsettling appearance. She slides her tarot deck and selenite into one pocket, the creepy teeth into the other, then gives me a grin.
Uber is on the way,
she says, holding up her phone.
I'll see you later?
Yeah. Maybe I can pick you up? I'd like to chat about some stuff. Maybe we can talk on the drive home. Rose's white painted brows flicker.
Sure. Everything okay?
Everything is fine. Yeah. I take a step closer, leaning down to press a light kiss to her cheek. Text me when you're about half an hour from being done. I'll come get you. And don't make too many people shit themselves tonight. Cleanup would be a bitch. Rose winks.
I thought you wanted me to have fun.
Mayhem in moderation.
That's boring.
With a final smile, Rose heads out to catch her Uber, leaving me in silence. I stand in the center of the room, watching that door like I hope she might turn around and bounce through it. I'm not sure how long I stand there, how long it takes for it to sink into my marrow, but I finally realize I don't care about the illusion of light anymore. My rose blooms in the dark, and all I want is to grow there with her.
Haunted. Rose. This is my favorite time of year. And it might not be Silveria Circus, but in a way, this is even better. A brand new night fair, an epic haunted house. A creepy-ass tent for my tarot readings. Saugus Fright Fair. It's a perfect October night. My setup is legit pretty fucking cool. When unsuspecting fairgoers come in for a reading from a terrifying clown, I've got all kinds of jump scares at my disposal. I keep a remote hidden on my lap and buttons on the floor I can press with my feet. I can turn off the lights, set off a smoke machine, trigger doll heads to drop from the ceiling, or screams from the hidden speakers, or a ghost mannequin to pop out of a cabinet at the side of the room. Sometimes other staff sneak in to scare the shit out of unsuspecting clients. People love it. Especially when they get so into the reading that they forget to anticipate the next scare. And my cards have been on fire tonight. Readings about exes and romance and secrets, about ambition and hope and love and loss. Eventually, things finally start to taper off toward the end of the night. There are still loads of people milling around, but there are longer gaps between visitors to my tent. I wrap up a reading for a pair of teenage girls. And when they leave, I take out the creepy teeth and decide it's time to turn off the neon open sign at the entrance of my tent. When it's switched off, I let the curtain drape across the door. With a quick call on my walkie-talkie to the fair manager, Wendy, to let her know I'm closing up, I pocket the device in exchange for my phone and send a text to Fionn. Hey, smiley face. I'm just finishing up for the night. You still want to pick me up? No worries if you're already in bed.
Yeah, for sure. Thought I'd make my way there to have a look around. I hope that's okay. I'm just parking.
That sounds perfect. With a smile and a deep, contented sigh, I sit back down at my table, cleansing my deck before I shuffle it. I've been so busy lately that I haven't had much time to do a reading for myself. And maybe it's not just that. I've kind of enjoyed not trying so hard to interpret the chaos that lives around and within me. But when my readings have seemed so spot on tonight, resonating with almost everyone who's come in to sit across from me, it's impossible not to pick the cards up and think about the future. Especially when Fionn is in town, though I try not to read our relationship too often in case the cards tell me something I don't want to know. I'm happy with what we have, even though I want more. And if it's destined to go in the other direction from where I hope we're heading, I'd rather just enjoy what we have without being worried about how it will end. So instead of asking about my love life directly, I go to one of my favorite questions for a simple reading, shuffling as I say it out loud. How can I prepare myself for what's coming next in my life? I draw the first card. Knight of Swords. I sit up straighter. This is a card I rarely pull for myself, and when I do, it usually means I have to act quickly. But it can also mean someone or something destructive. Someone ruinous. I draw the second card. Death. My blood runs cold as though it's been drained from my limbs, leaving my skin chilled and my hair raised. Like any card, death can mean many things. Transformation, endings, change needed for growth. But after the Knight of Swords, I draw the final card. Four of Swords. Stillness, pause, mourning, time spent recovering. From what? I ask. But I don't think I want to know the answers to my questions anymore. I stare at the three cards. Unease snakes across my spine. The longer I look at them, the more I wish they would change, or that I could see any other meaning than mayhem and destruction. But no matter how I try to spin the interpretation, there's only a sense of dread drifting around me. I hastily shuffle the cards back into the deck, put them in my leather pouch with the selenite, then slide the pouch into my pocket. With a long sigh that does little to calm me, I sit back in my chair and press my eyes closed. I try to find comfort in the sounds of laughter and music outside my tent, in the scents of donuts and popcorn. I close my arms over my middle and think of Fionn's embrace, of the warmth of his presence, and the calm that comes with knowing there's someone out here in this crazy world who sees the real me and doesn't turn away. And that's all I want now. Some comfort and calm. Time to go home, I whisper to myself.
That's a shame. I was hoping you were going to tell me about all the good things that lie in my future.
My eyes snap open and land on a man looming at the entrance of my tent. His face is painted in white, a contrast to the yellow of his teeth. His lips peeled back in a menacing grin. His eyes are fixed on me, framed by diamonds of black face paint. A red ball covers the tip of his nose, a wig of curly fuzz stuck to his bald head. I go rigid in my seat.
After all, I drove all night to get here just to see you. Get it?
Matthew Cranwell points to his face where a glass eye covers the prosthetic that must now be in place behind it. His smile widens.
Do you like my new look? I think the nose really adds something.
You're right. You look just as much like a clown as the first time I met you, I say, edging my foot closer to the buttons hidden by my tablecloth. I heard your wife finally left your ugly ass. Took the kids with her, too? Good for her. A flash of fury passes across his face, but he banks his ire behind a menacing smile.
It's been good for me, too. Lost a couple pounds. Quit the booze, just about. Got myself a new purpose, you see. I've rekindled my love of hunting.
He reaches behind his back, withdrawing a blade that's as long as the one I left in my apartment, sitting in its sheath on the nightstand.
And I've certainly fleshed out some very interesting details about you.
He takes a single step closer to my table.
The sparrow,
he hisses. 1,000 thoughts swirl through my mind. How could he know? How much does he know? Did someone tell him? Who did he tell? His lips curl with the knowledge that his arrow has struck its mark. No matter how hard I try to keep the fear from my face, he sees it. And he loves it.
That's right,
he says, as he takes a single step closer to my table.
Did you know I used to be a deputy for the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office? 10 years I worked there.
I say nothing.
I might be a farmer now, but those skills, that training, it doesn't disappear. I started tracking down all the places your little circus stopped. Does the name Vicky Robbins ring a bell?
When I don't answer, he tips the end of his blade in my direction.
It should. They never found out where she got the poison that didn't quite kill her husband. Shame he murdered her so quick. Maybe he would have gotten a confession from her if he hadn't choked her to death. But you and I both know it was the sparrow who gave it to her.
I wonder why someone would try to kill their husband, I snipe, as I tighten my grip on the seat of my chair until my fingers lose feeling. Any ideas? Matt chuckles, a low and mirthless rumble that fills my tent with malice.
The more I started to look, the more I found a trail of untimely deaths in the small towns you passed through. At least one or two men every season. You must be responsible for, what, 10 murders? Maybe 20? Oh wait, make that 21 if you count Eric Donovan, isn't that right?
As far as I heard, Eric Donovan's never turned up. He might still be traveling the country, doing whatever dipshits do.
You don't always need to find a body for there to be a murder.
he says around a dark and triumphant smile. We both know he has enough knowledge of a potential connection between me and Eric that there's no protest worth making. But it's his next words that turn my skin cold.
Dr. Kane, he must know too, right? He's the one who did your surgery, put you up at his house, worked with Eric's girlfriend. He beat the shit out of a boxer at that fight club for knocking you over, as the story goes. And he covered for you that time I dropped in for a visit at the clinic. I know you were there, listening to every word.
Leave Dr. Kane out of this.
I tried, actually. Spoke to him just last night. But he seems hell-bent on sticking with you. I know he was flying here today. I'm betting to see you. Isn't that right?
Matt waggles his brows and squeaks his red nose.
So just how much does he know exactly? Or is it even worse than that? Has he been helping you?
What the fuck do you want? You think you're here to arrest me? You were kicked off the force for being an incompetent douchebag, from what I heard. So if this is some kind of lame-ass attempt to get yourself back onto the roster, think again. It's never going to work. He shakes his head. The white paint cracks and shifts and flakes on his face as his grin stretches.
Do I look like the kind of guy to pass you over to some idiot in a uniform when I can settle the score myself?
His leather gloves creak. His fists tighten. The knife glints in the dim light. My own mask of makeup tightens on my skin as I mirror his smile. Do I look like the kind of girl to go down without a fight? I hit the button for the lights and plunge us into darkness. Matt crashes into my table. I pick up my chair and swing it in his direction. Pain spikes in my wrists and elbows with the impact. Our cries of shock and frustration are a harmony in the darkness. I take a second swing, a return pass. The chair breaks against Matt, and I hear what I hope is the knife as it flies from his hand to break the glass in the cabinet door. All I have left of the chair is the seat. And though he groans with pain and curses with rage, I know he's not done yet. I use the only advantage I have now, my knowledge of this cramped space. I drop to the floor and crawl to the back edge of the tent as Matt thrashes around the darkness, destroying everything he touches in his search for me. I stay crouched and quiet, tearing at the canvas until the pins loosen from the grass. Wooden seat still clutched in my grip, I slide free of the tent and run. An unhinged, dirt-streaked, grass-stained clown running through the fairgrounds attracts only yelps of surprise and delight from the patrons. No one notices the panic in my eyes. The way I stop and spin around and scan my surroundings for the man who wants to kill me. No one hears the heartbeats that roar in my ears. No one knows the realization that blares through my mind, obliterating all other thoughts. If I don't kill Matt Cranwell, he will kill me, and he will take Fionn down too. I cannot let that happen. I look left and right, but there's no sign of Matt Cranwell. Why does this shit never go right? I ask out loud as I pivot on my heel and scour the crowd. The scent of donuts and churros and burgers swirls around me on the cool breeze. Aside from the occasional staff costume I recognize, it's impossible to pinpoint a familiar face beneath masks and makeup. A little surge of panic ripples through my heart. Maybe Matt has taken off like any sane person would do. Maybe he'll bring in the cops after all. There's no reason to entirely bank on his narcissism and misogyny and fondness for physical violence to get the better of him. And Christ, what if he does think rationally and take this to the police? Fionn will definitely be dragged down into the thick of this mess with me. My imagination threatens to run wild with images of red and blue lights, courtrooms and lawyers and metal bars that slide closed and never open. But I can't get caught up in all that now. I've got a job to do. Get your shit together, Rose Evans. I start another turn when a quick burst of movement catches my eye. I spot Matt next to the hot dog stand. He's peering around the corner of the glass display. Then Matt spots me, and unfortunately, he's picked up a second weapon, his knife clutched in one hand, and a hot dog skewer in the other. He straightens and comes out from behind the cart, creeping another step in my direction.
It's on, you fucking clown!
He snarls through a feral grin. I take off, running. Matt roars a threat of vengeance behind me as I weave through groups of teenagers with their popcorn and cotton candy, and staff dressed as zombies and witches and deranged clowns. I dart between stands and through narrow passageways. My heart riots in my chest. My stomach threatens a revolt. But I still keep Matt just close enough that he can find me, just far enough that he can't catch me, and I keep my eye on the target I spot through the crowd. The haunted house. I run for the staff-only side door, tossing a glance over my shoulder as I scramble to pull the keys from my pocket and unlock it. Matt is in the distance, but lasered onto me. He has a limp in his step that slows him down, but not by much. He snarls when I give him my best psycho clown grin. I push the door open and leave it ajar, and then I plunge into the darkness, ducking into the shadows. A moment later, Matt bursts through the door.
Fucking bitch!
He starts limping down the corridor where performers can travel behind the walls to scare visitors from behind hidden panels and trapdoors. Screams and laughter and the dusty aroma of glycerin fog linger in the air. His head swings side to side as he looks for any sign of me, a weapon still clutched in each hand. I step from the shadows, pulling the door shut with a quiet snick. I sneak behind Matt, the flat seat clutched between my hands.
Where the fuck are you?
I smile. Ta-da, motherfucker. I use all my force as I swing the wooden seat and hit Matt in the back of the head. He stumbles and screams, his weapons clatter into the shadows. He drops to his knees, his head clutched between his hands, a mess of rage and chaos. I set the chair down and slink past him as he writhes in the dark. I start feeling for the knife so I can fucking finish this once and for all. And just as I think I've felt the sharp tip of something metal, a hand clamps around my ankle and yanks me back across the floor. When I roll over to fight him off, his glass eye is gone, leaving his lid half closed. But that's not the one I'm focused on. My shocked gaze is caught on the other eye, bulging much too far beyond the confines of its socket. Holy fucking shit, it's true. I hit you so hard your eyeball popped out. I retch, barely managing to swallow down a swell of nausea. The lids are pulled back across the bloodshot globe, making him look both surprised and cartoonishly angry. I retch again. Put it back in, for the love of God.
I'm going to fucking kill you!
He snarls. He pitches toward me, his hands tensed into claws that I'm sure he's desperate to clamp around my neck. With a sharp kick to his chest, I manage to keep him at bay long enough that I can scramble to my feet and take off running down the corridor. With a momentary glance over my shoulder, I see Matt staggering to his feet, the knife gripped in his hand. He stalks toward me, and I dart through a curtain at the end of the hall to enter the ground floor of the visitor section of the haunted house. I slip past a group of teens huddled together in a corner of the creepy kitchen display, giving them an extra scare as a worker dressed as a bloodied butcher frightens them with a plastic knife. I keep going past a couple who clutches each other when a staff member drops from a hidden platform near the ceiling. I head past the smoke machine and lasers that obscure a clown crouched beneath white tendrils of mist. Matt is still behind me, and I pick up the pace through the displays and jump scares and terrified visitors. Then I head up the stairs to the second level. The labyrinthine second story is filled with narrow rooms and screams from the floor below. I back up into a shadowed space and crouch between a china cupboard filled with decapitated doll heads and a blood-splattered sheet, trying to slow my breathing and listen for Matt's work boots thudding across the floorboards. But he doesn't come. A couple passes, then a group of four teens, but still no Matt. I wait, trying to sense the presence of anyone in the dark beyond the manufactured screams and the haunting music that plays through the hidden speakers. Maybe he's left. Come to his senses? Decided to seek treatment for his very fucked up ocular situation? Or maybe he's off to call the police, the thing he should have done in the first place. I need to find him before he does. There's a quiet scuff of shoes against the wooden floorboards. This might be my best chance to face him. I stand and peer around the edge of the cupboard, but it's not Matt that I see. It's Dr. Fionn Kane. I'm not sure how he knows it's me, even in the dark, even with my horror clown costume when there are clowns all over this fucking fairground. But he does. Crap, I hiss as he strides toward me.
Rose.
Fionn's eyes dart from my face to the seat of the broken chair in my hand and back again.
What are you doing?
I'm working?
And by working you mean running around yelling, come get me, you ugly piece of shit, and laughing maniacally?
His eyes narrow.
I thought I saw someone in a costume following you. I came to make sure you were okay.
That's nice. I'm totally fine. Just out here representing the spooky season atmosphere. I say with a shrug as he reaches forward and flicks one of the stuffed arms of my jester's hat, the bell on the end tinkling in reply. He frowns.
You sure you're okay?
Yeah, thanks. I try not to shift my weight on my feet, but I can't help the need to fidget under his unerring stare. Why don't you go get us some hot dogs? I'm totally famished. I'll meet you there as soon as I'm done with my thing.
Your thing?
My performance thing.
I thought you said in your text that you were done for the night.
Yeah, almost. Just one more thing. I dig in the pockets of my baggy black and white pants, the fabric stained with a spray of blood that could be fake. Or not. When I withdraw a roll of food and drink tickets and hold them out for Fionn to take, he watches my hand with suspicion.
So when are you actually done?
He asks. Maybe give me, 20 minutes? It comes out as a squeaked question. My throat just seems to close around the words. Fionn's eyes snap to mine as though I've just confessed every one of my mounting sins. His chin dips toward his chest, and he pins me with a stare both wary and menacing.
Rose.
A floorboard creaks behind Fionn. A flash of orange light glints off a blade. I drop the tickets and grip Fionn's wrist to tug on it as hard as I can, enough to imbalance him and send him stumbling past me. I deliver a solid kick to Matt's shin as I hear Fionn's shocked voice say Cranwell's name like a question behind me. Thought you'd never catch up. With a second kick, his knife flies from his hand and hits the wall. He snarls in frustration, searching the floor as I duck behind Fionn and shove him forward toward the next room. Time to go, Doc. We tumble into a mock bedroom with Matt on our heels, his irate string of swears punctuated by the screeches and screams and cackles that pour from the speakers overhead. There's fake blood everywhere. On the walls, the ceiling, the bed, where a life-size possessed mannequin springs up from the mattress. An old TV that crackles static in the corner of the room. Fionn rushes forward, and his movement triggers the sensor for a strobe light. It pulses a disorienting rhythm of light and darkness. Fionn reaches back for me and grabs my wrist as he stumbles toward a door on the opposite side of the room, hauling me forward. But Matt catches my shoulder, spins me around. I'm knocked out of his grasp and a shocked cry fills the room. There's a blinding flash. It's the automatic camera, hidden to take pictures of frightened visitors. In the light, I see the horror on Matt's face, his features exaggerated by makeup and blood and shadows. The strobe turns off, leaving only the dim green and blue lights mounted in the corners of the room. Fionn drills Matt with an unblinking, ruthless stare. Even when Matt looks down in horror at the knife Fionn presses into his abdomen, Fionn never breaks his gaze away. He keeps hold of the back of Matt's neck with his free hand, his fingertips digging into the painted flesh.
You thought you were going to enjoy your revenge?
Fionn says. With a swift tug, he draws the blade upward. Crimson floods from the wound, staining Matt's torn shirt. His mouth is open, but only a strained noise of pain escapes, as though his body is too shocked to manufacture sound.
And how does this feel?
Another jerk of the knife. Still pretty good? a soft tear of flesh followed by Matt's whispered plea for mercy.
Because I think it feels fucking fantastic.
Fionn whips the knife free of Matt's abdomen and tosses it behind him. He bunches Matt's shirt with both hands at the shoulders and pushes him to the wall where mannequins disguised as dead bodies hang from meat hooks. He slams Matt's back into the wall and keeps him pinned there with one hand as he tosses one of the dummies to the floor with the other.
Please,
Matt begs, his voice barely audible between the recorded screams and voices playing around us. But Fionn ignores him. Matt has no strength to fight back. No way to stop Fionn as he hoists him up and pushes his back against the wall, letting gravity drive the pointed hook into Matt's body. He gasps with a fresh wave of pain. Fionn takes a step back and surveys his work. Blood pours from the gash up the length of Matt's abdomen. It trickles from the corners of his mouth. Matt's limbs scrape across the wall, but they don't touch the floor. One of his hands raises above his head in a desperate search for relief from the metal hook, but he can only trace the rusted iron. He doesn't have enough strength to grab it. Everything is moving slower than it should, like he's a fly caught in amber, stuck in the sticky embrace of time. Matt's lips move, but they can't seem to form words, just a slow series of motions that carry no sound. But Fionn seems to decipher the plea, his focus still locked on Matt. He laughs, a callous and cold delight that quickly dies.
Help? You want someone to help you?
Fionn shakes his head.
Do you really think I would ever let you threaten her and walk away? Do you seriously think you could hurt her and I would just let you live? You don't deserve mercy. When have you ever given that to anyone else? So the only thing I'll give to you is suffering.
With his final word, Fionn delivers a punch to Matt's face that renders him unconscious. His head drops forward. His breathing is shallow, a liquid rumble. And then it goes quiet. We're both staring at the man on the wall when excited voices come from a few rooms away. Fionn turns to me, and I'm sure my face is an identical mask of panic. Get under the covers, I hiss, pointing to the bed before I rush to the mannequin lying on the floor. I whip the burlap sack from its head and pull it down over Matt's instead, cringing when I catch a glimpse of the bulging eye. With a few deep breaths to recenter myself, I turn to check on Fionn's progress. But he still hasn't moved. Come on, Doc, under the covers. Make some creepy sounds. I take him by the hand and lead him there, forcing him to lie beneath the stained white sheet. His face is expressionless when I cover him over just in time to creep out a pair of couples who clutch each other and laugh. I keep them moving toward the exit, and as soon as they're gone, I take the walkie-talkie from my pocket and turn it on. Wendy, it's Rose, come in. Static crackles on the line. And then, I'm here, over. I'm on the second level of the haunted house. Someone puked all over the floor, I say, casting a glance to the dead man hanging from the wall, as Fionn casts the blanket aside and rises from the bed. I'll clean it up, but can you shut it down? Over.
Yeah, the last group just went through for the night anyway. Do you need help? Over.
No, I'm all good, thanks. It'll take a while, but I can finish here. I've got keys, so I can do a final lockup. I'll see you tomorrow. Over and out. I turn down my walkie-talkie, sliding it into my pocket, as I let out a long stream of air through pursed lips. My arms tremble. My heart slams so hard against my sternum that it could break bone. Fionn is standing in the center of the room, unmoving, eerily still. He watches as I pull the jester hat from my head and let it fall to the floor. I must look fucking deranged with my hair in wonky pigtails and my black and white makeup probably smeared with sweat and my clown costume streaked and stained. Maybe I am as unhinged as I look. Maybe that's what he's thinking as he looks at me, his expression unreadable. The music and screams stop, plunging us into silence so abrupt and all-consuming it nearly hurts. This has gone too far. This time, there's no coming back. I just don't know how to be anything but what I am. Mayhem. I started it, I whisper. But I think we both know that I'm not talking about Matt Cranwell. and for the first time, I feel remorse for what I've done. The choices I make might suit me, but maybe this life is only meant to be lived alone. A tear breaches my lashes. Another quickly follows. I'm sorry. Fionn breaks his haunted, motionless vigil. He strides toward me. And the moment his lips touch mine, I know I'll never be the same.
Dark Corners. Fionn. This isn't just a kiss. This is what it feels like to break wide open. I frame Rose's face with my bloody hands. I devour her with need. She grips the back of my neck and consumes me with equal desire. This kiss is all bite, its teeth clashing, moans and whimpers and sweeping tongues. Its urgency and demand. It's an unleashing of desire that we've pushed beneath unraveling rules and conditions for far too long. I'm drowning in her, swept away in a current I couldn't escape if I wanted to. Her scent, her taste, the more I take, the more I want. The more she gives, the more I need. I don't know how I ever lived without the feel of her mouth on mine or the vibration of her moan on my lips. Her electric touch hums in my flesh. It's the most alive I've ever felt. I slide a hand down her face, her makeup smearing beneath my fingertips, deepening the kiss as I push her toward the bed. We both fumble with our clothes, me with the buttons of her costume and her with my belt. When we make it to the bed, I break the kiss just long enough to push the top sheet and mannequin off the edge and onto the floor.
Anyone could walk in here,
Rose says, her tone breathless as I guide her down to the mattress. I don't fucking care. I catch a glimpse of her smile before I dive back into the kiss, pulling her baggy pants down and then the leggings and thong beneath. I bite her neck just hard enough to make her gasp. I soothe the nip with a kiss as I run a finger over her pussy, trailing the liquid heat of her arousal over her clit. I swallow her moan, lavish her tongue with mine, consume every sound of pleasure she makes as I swirl my touch over her swollen bundle of nerves. She rides beneath me. She hums at my touch. She breaks the kiss to frame my face with her hands, her eyes dancing between mine.
I want you, Fionn.
Her tongue sweeps across her lips as her gaze flicks to my mouth.
I need you.
The air stills around us. Time seems to slow. She's said words like that before. So have I. But it feels different this time. I raise my hand to her face as I hover over her, sweeping the fringe from her brow. She might have a crazy costume on, a face painted in smears of black and white, but all I see is Rose. Beautiful and bright. Shining through her mask like she was never meant to live behind one. I don't think she ever has. And for the first time, maybe I know what that freedom tastes like. I need you too, I say, my heart a molten core in my chest when her eyes flutter closed as my caress trails down her cheek. I think I always have. I just didn't realize how much until you showed up and changed everything. Rose's eyes open, inky pools in the dim light. They don't leave mine. She reaches between us and tugs my jeans and briefs down to grasp my length with a firm hand. When I shed my jacket and shirt, she lines me up to her entrance. I watch every subtle change in her expression as I push into her tight heat. Desperation and relief, pleasure and need, hope and secrets. All the things I think we both still want to say but are afraid to put out into the world in case they're too fragile to thrive in the dark. But they're still there, blooming in the night. When I've slid all the way to the base of my erection, I pause, leaning closer, savoring the sweetness of her scent and the longing in her eyes. No one has ever looked at me the way she does. And I've never wanted anyone like I want Rose. Never admired anyone. Never been as enchanted or enthralled by anyone. I've never been as awestruck by anyone. This woman who doesn't just live her life, but blazes through it like a comet burning through space, setting fire to the sky. I've never wanted to open up the darkest corners of my soul and show them to anyone like I have to Rose. I've never loved anyone like I love Rose. I close the distance between us and seal my lips to hers. I pull out slowly, push back in. We pick up a rhythm, slow at first, gentle amid the horror and violence that's melted into the backdrop like a distant memory. Rose's fingers trace patterns on my skin, following the ridges of my spine. She hooks a leg across my back and takes my cock deeper. Every gliding stroke is heaven, her heat an embrace that I never want to leave. I break the kiss to press my lips in a line down her neck, across her collarbone, down her chest. I pull the cups of her lace bra down and expose her breasts. She gasps when I take her nipple in my mouth and tease it with my tongue. I scrape it with my teeth just hard enough to make her clench tighter around me. Then I soothe the whisper of pain with my tongue.
I'm not going to last.
She breathes as I piston into her, the rhythm more urgent with every thrust.
I want to come with you.
I take her delicate wrist and guide it down between us. Her fingers trace the muscle of my chest and the ridges of my abs until I turn her hand down to her clit. Then you better touch yourself, because I'm about to fucking fill this perfect pussy. I seal my mouth to hers and swallow the moan that tumbles free. Rose's touch circles between us. The current builds at the base of my spine. I feel her channel constrict around my erection, her muscles tighten beneath my hands, one of them folded around her neck, her pulse a hammer against my palm. Her head tilts back, but the kiss never breaks. Not as a desperate scream threatens to burst free between us. Not as my balls tighten and I spill into her, pushing as deep as our bodies will allow. Not as the orgasm rolls through me in waves until my heart threatens to break out of my chest, its furious beats deafening in my ears. Not even when Rose's muscles start to relax, her body boneless as my strokes gentle until they still. Even then the kiss lingers. What was desperate becomes sweet, soft. A tender, wordless conversation in the dark. When it finally breaks, I stare into Rose's eyes. Reality starts to creep back in one piece at a time. The quiet crackle of static on the TV, the scent of the fog machine, the green and blue lights, the body on the wall, the things I've done. Rose. I need to get her out of here. I pull out slowly, not ready to part, to embrace the dread of the unknown when I've just felt the first moments of clarity that I've been searching for all my life. You need to leave. Rose props herself up on her elbows, searching my face. Her skin glistens in the dim light with every breath, and I want nothing more than to feel her warmth again.
What do you mean?
I need to call someone to help with this, I say, with a nod to the wall behind me as I pull my jeans and briefs up.
We can do it.
We can't, Rose. but I know someone who can help.
I can stay. I want to.
A thread of panic weaves its way through her voice when she says,
I don't want to leave you alone here with this.
Rose, I say, my shoulders falling when she shakes her head. I can't. I'm the one who did this, and I'm not going to risk you getting caught up in the aftermath. Tears shine in Rose's eyes as she sits up.
But...
Please, I say, kneeling in front of her. I take her face in my hands. Her lip wobbles with mounting worry and the effort to hold back tears. She tries to shake her head, but I pin her with a serious and steady stare, one that brooks no argument. I cannot risk you. I will not. Please, Rose, I'm begging you. Just go back to the apartment, and I'll be there as soon as I can. The moment between us could be eternal. Every shift of her glassy eyes between mine, every breath she takes, every motion of my thumb as I caress her cheek, it all embeds itself into my memory.
Okay,
she finally whispers, and I try my best to give her a reassuring smile. I lean closer, press my lips to hers, and then I let go. We pull our clothes back into place, fix the bed. When we're done, Rose moves to the door but hesitates. Are you okay?
Yeah. Are you?
I smile, though it's faint and probably not very convincing. I will be. Rose gives me a nod, her eyes tracking toward Cranwell's body and lingering there before returning to me.
Thank you, Fionn. I'll see you soon?
Yeah, it'll be okay. I promise. With a final glance that carries the weight of fear and worry behind her eyes, Rose turns away and leaves. It's not until I'm sure she's gone that I make a phone call I never thought I would make. And then I wait, standing in the center of the room like I'm one of the mannequins, an unmoving statue among the mayhem and madness. It could be 5 minutes that passes. It could be an hour. I replay every moment of the night on a loop until the sound of approaching footsteps breaks me away.
Well,
well, well, a voice says from the darkness. I've only heard him a handful of times, but I'd recognize the devil anywhere.
Out of everyone, yours is the call I least expected, but the one I most hoped for.
Leander Mays steps into the light. I stand straighter. Thank you for coming.
You Kane boys are so different and yet so much the same,
Leander says as he saunters closer. He's completely at ease in the midst of chaos, much like he was the first time we met. I'd looked up to see him enter the room as I stitched Rowan's split lip. Lachlan still had his belt gripped tight around our father's neck, even though his final heartbeat had long since passed. And Leander grinned then, much in the way he grins now.
You've always looked out for one another. Always had each other's backs. I'm assuming that's why I'm standing here right now and not Lachlan or Rowan. Isn't that right?
I thought you might be more... efficient, I say, though that's only a half-truth. Leander's gaze pans around us and his smile stretches. When his eyes snag on the mannequins hung up on the wall, Matt Cranwell's closest to the corner of the room, he laughs.
Oh dear, you've been having some fun.
Not exactly. My words feel like a lie. He makes his way toward the body, slowing his steps as he passes by. He raises his hand, a photo pinched between his fingers. In the picture, Matt and I stare into each other's eyes. Me with a lethal glare. Matt with shock and fear painted across his face. At the bottom of the image is the knife in my hand, lodged deep into Cranwell's belly.
A souvenir,
Leander says, and slides it into the interior pocket of his jacket as he gives me a wink. I watch as Leander saunters toward Cranwell. He stops within reach and tilts his head as though he's contemplating a work of art. And suddenly, I feel like the beast I've been desperate to unleash has just found itself in a whole new cage.
Very precise,
Leander says, motioning toward Cranwell.
Surgical, even. Made a bit of a mess, though.
He leans closer to the body, inspecting the blood-soaked shirt and the torn flesh. He prods the wound with a gloved finger and Matt's bowels and intestines tumble out of the slit, pink ropes that glisten in the dim light and drop to Leander's feet, his shoes covered with waterproof booties.
Intestines make me hungry every time I see them, even despite the smell. Reminds me of sausages. Does this place have hot dogs?
When I don't immediately answer, Leander turns just enough to look at me over his shoulder. Yes, but the food stalls are all closed.
Shame. I'd really like a hot dog.
Our gazes remain pinned to each other for a long moment, and then Leander turns his attention back to the body on the wall. When he removes the burlap sack from Matt's head, he barks a delighted laugh before leaning in close to examine the dead man's face.
Wow, impressive. That must have been a hard blow,
he says as he flicks the bulging eye. He pokes a finger into the other orbit where the glass eye once was.
I'm going to assume there was a prosthetic as well. Yes? Where is it?
My skin turns to fire. When Leander turns and raises his brows in a question, there's nothing I can give for an answer.
Don't recall where you hit him so hard his eyes popped out?
Leander says. I shake my head and the corners of his lips curl.
Pity! No matter. I can have a scent dog brought in. We'll find it.
He whistles and two unfamiliar men enter the room wearing hooded coveralls and carrying toolboxes and bags of supplies.
So, what did he do to deserve this fantastical and very fitting end anyway?
I think of Rose. Her face. Her fear. I think of the incandescent rage that consumed every cell in my body. The relief and excitement when the blade pierced Cranwell's abdomen. The feeling of his flesh splitting open and the terror in his scream. He started it. Leander huffs, clearly pleased with my answer.
And you finished it.
He pats Cranwell's pockets down until he finds his mobile phone.
I'll make sure this is all taken care of.
I appreciate your help, I say, and he gives me a single nod in reply. How much do I owe you? Leander pins me with an unblinking, unnerving stare that latches on and doesn't let go. His expression is blank, emotionless, and then a burst of laughter. It's a sudden transformation that brightens his cheeks and crinkles the corners of his eyes. It would look normal if it wasn't for the predatory way he watches me.
I don't want your money.
My heart falls to the floor, ready to be removed with the rest of the blood and gore spilled across the planks beneath my feet. And Leander Mays sees it. He loves it.
I just want a little bit of your time, your expertise.
I glance over at one of the men as he fills a spray bottle with a solution in a silver container. He meets my eyes only briefly before his attention flicks to Leander and then shifts to the floor. What do you mean? I ask when I refocus on Leander, whose smile remains undimmed.
What I mean is, I need your skills.
Leander pulls a plastic bag from the interior pocket of his jacket and slips the phone into it. He walks toward where the two men have started working and picks up a spray bottle. He mists the liquid over the floor, and patches start to glow with an eerie blue luminescence. There are smears and streaks. Boot prints in blood. One set of prints is mine. One must be Cranwell's. But there's a much smaller set that glows with the damning light of luminol. Rose. Leander chuckles.
Looks like you had a little partner in crime.
My hands fold into fists, a motion that catches Leander's attention immediately. He grins. Even despite the body hanging from the wall and the knowledge that I've just brutally killed a man, Leander Mays is not afraid of me. He turns his back to me and sets the spray bottle down next to the supplies.
Did you ever tell your brothers what you did?
I don't want to answer, but when Leander faces me, it's impossible not to say something. Do you mean tipping off your cousins about the money my father owed them? His smile stretches.
That too. But I was more referring to how you stabbed your father in the back and severed his spinal cord. Lachlan might have taken credit for that kill by strangling Callum Kane, but even he didn't know that you're the one who brought the bastard down, does he?
He studies me with that predatory glee still lingering in his eyes.
Quite a nifty little trick, isn't it? If you aim just right,
Leander says with a sudden jabbing motion toward Cranwell's body, his fist closed around a phantom weapon.
There's hardly any blood at all. He must have felt nothing from the waist down. Just a quick snap and down he went so your brother could finish the job. Even I didn't realize at first. Not until I cleaned up that mess and stripped Callum of his clothes.
For as many times as Lachlan has called Leander the devil, I've not really understood why. But now I do. In just a few short minutes, he's got me trapped in a corner by my secrets and deeds and desires, unable to escape. What is it that you want, Leander?
I'm so happy you asked.
He wanders back to the cooling body and leans toward it, inspecting Cranwell's slack expression.
I have a contract coming up. It's kind of a big deal, if I do say so myself. I've hired the best of the best. Cream of the crop, if you will. But even then,
he says, his gaze drifting back to me over his shoulder,
I expect some casualties. Bodies that need repair on the battlefield, you know? And I need my people to be in tip-top shape for the duration of the contract.
I say nothing. Leander turns back to Cranwell, but not before I catch a glimpse of his grin.
Some of my team might need a bit of rejuvenation when the work is done. Anonymity is paramount in certain circles, if you catch my drift.
I hold my palms up in a placating gesture, even though we both know they're smeared with crimson stains. I'm not a cosmetic surgeon.
You're a smart, motivated man,
Leander says.
I'm confident you'll learn.
My gaze slices toward the two men cleaning up after my